All right. Welcome to the Stepping Up podcast. I am your host, Nikki Gingerich, and it is my joy and my pleasure to bring a brand new interview to you for this week. And it's a one that I'm personally interested in and wanting to learn more about. So I'm sure you'll hear some questions coming from me personally, which I'm sure many of you out there have the same questions, and that's where I'll be coming from. But today we have Jen Sappel. She is the CEO and founder of UTOR Wealth. She is a podcast host, keynote speaker, mom of two, financial ninja, love that, who's looking out for the planet and its people. Jen is on a mission to help non-traditional financial clients build confidence with their money. She's empowering those who aren't your typical financial consumer, myself, to become more comfortable and confident in their own money journey. So Jen, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I'm so glad you're here. I'm so excited to have you here. So let's start off with a big question, a very general question of how you got to start your company and how you got to be on this mission of empowering women to take control of their finances and learn about investments and really tackle their own wealth.
Yeah. Yeah. You weren't kidding. That is a big question. I've been a financial advisor for 17 years. I think maybe 18 years now. So I've been a financial advisor for a long time, but I haven't focused on women until just the last 3 years. It was 2019 that I really made the conscious decision to embrace my origin story, and stop doing what I had been doing for like the previous 15 years, which was going about life and my business and all of those things in like the traditional way, right? This is the path that most people take, and this is how most people do it. And that's a very, in financial services and many industries, it's a very, very masculine approach. 85% of advisors are men. So it's only been the last 3 years. And you know, your question was why, I think, why women? And that's because that's me embracing my own kind of journey into motherhood, and my own upbringing and my own kind of creating space, and approaching things differently and viewing things differently, that it's really, I've made this focus and change pretty recently.
That's fantastic. And to hear that statistic of 80% of advisors are men opens your eyes to say, well, yeah, the advice we're getting is from a male perspective, which is very different from the female mom woman perspective. So when you started explaining your answer, you talked about your embracing your origin story. Is it okay if I ask you to tell us your origin story and really dive in there?
Yeah. Of course. My origin story is that I had two very different childhoods. There was the childhood pre-divorce and the childhood post-divorce. Like pre-divorce, we lived in California. My sister and I were spoiled brats. And I'm like, I mean, spoiled brats, like the new toy, the trips to Disneyland. You know, we never had a want for anything. We were daddy's girls and without a care in the world. And life changed very, very significantly post-divorce. So I was 10 when that happened. My mom moved my sister and I up here to Washington, where we live now, because that's where her family was from. So she was going to do the single mom thing. She needed support. So we moved next door to grandma and grandpa, and then dad ended up moving up here also. So it was like joint custody, but both of them like major career changes, major income changes, and money in the house after the divorce was a very, very stressful topic. It was very like wound up in mystery. And when I think about like, you know, what was the topic of money in my house growing up, it was just stressful, and bad and negative. There wasn't a whole lot of positive conversation about it at all. So me being the firstborn and being, you know, very driven and goal oriented and things like that. I came out of my teen years as like, well, I'm going to be smarter than everybody else. And I'm going to tackle this topic and I'm going to learn everything I can about it. So, that's what I did. I bought my first house at 21. I was saving half of my paycheck and only spending half of my paycheck. And when somebody had asked, hey, do you want to be a financial advisor? My initial response was no, that sounds boring. And here I am almost two decades later. So
my goodness. So what has your experience? What are you experiencing now? And maybe what have you experienced before you really shifted to focusing on helping women of over this two decade career of finding people? You're someone at 21 who bought a home. That's a huge feat. And to be able to say you were saving half of your paycheck and spending half your paycheck, I would care to say that the majority of people would sit, look at that and say, how, why? Because I think there's a lack of self-control when it comes to spending money in our culture. So what has that seen for you? Like, what do you kind of see as a financial advisor, people coming to you saying, oh my God, I need help. And where is the space? And
right.
I almost kind of see you like cleaning up the mess. I don't know if that's correct or not, but that's what I envision.
Yeah. Well, I see a lot of that. So I hope anybody listening, I want them to know that wherever you are today, whether you're in debt, and you're hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt or you're not in debt, and you're squirreling away a bunch of money in savings accounts, but you have no idea what to do with it after that. Like, wherever you are in your financial journey is perfectly fine and acceptable today. So thank you for asking, you know, kind of what I see. What's normal in America, normal savings rate in America is most people in our country save around 5% of their income. So that's where the average is. So yeah, me at 50% in my 20s, and I'm not at 50% today. So doesn't have to be a lifetime thing, was very unusual. Where I would say like the starting point is if you're not happy or you're not confident in where you're sitting today, the first thing to do is kind of take tally of where and own really where you are financially. And the financial term for that is to understand what your net worth is. Even if it's on like a piece of paper, you know, and it's not an Excel spreadsheet or it's not an app, right? And all of those are, again, viable options. But if you write down everything you own on one side, and that's bank accounts and retirement accounts, and if you own a home, an equity in your home or the value of your home, everything you own on one side and everything you owe on the other side, and then subtract the two, then what you're going to get is your net worth. And here I want to remind everybody, your net worth is not your self-worth. Like, those two things are completely unrelated. You can be a billionaire and be a terrible human being. And you can be completely in debt and be an amazing human being. So don't conflate the two. Don't get your net worth and your self-worth confused. But know what your net worth is, and then know that to improve your financial situation is just keeping an eye on your net worth and helping it to grow over time. Mm-hmm. And increasing your net worth is what eventually gives you the ability to step away from having to work, stepping away from having to earn income, and you let your net worth, your investments, you know, your financial tools cover all your bills and costs of living instead. Does that make sense?
That does make sense. That's great. And net worth is something I really didn't start. I just started tracking probably within the last year of really paying attention to it. So I was like, oh, pat myself on the back. I did that one. I'm doing it as best as I can. So what are some things that people want to include in that net worth to really start building, to build that up?
Yeah. Beautiful question. There are really only six things that you can be
that's good
building your net worth in. Yeah. So, and I like the thing, and this is one of the things that I've just embraced about the financial services industry, you know, my industry at large, it's very confusing, right? And there's lots of ranking. There's lots of like, oh, this is the best. This is the best thing to do. This is the worst thing to do. I don't believe any of that. What I believe is all of those decisions really come down to preference. So if I were going to ask you like, oh, what's the best exercise? Like, what's the exercise that you'll do regularly? That's the best exercise for you, right?
Love it.
If somebody told me running was the best exercise, I would be like, okay, well, I'm never running again. I'm never going to be in shape because I hate running.
So, I love that analogy. This is great.
Yeah. I'll ride my bike all day, but no, you want me to run? It's not happening. So back to the six, your six options. You can invest in or build your net worth in banking or insurance products. So products that you get from a bank or an insurance company, things like checking and savings accounts, CDs, annuities, cash value life insurance. All of those are examples of banking or insurance products. So that's one option. Another option is real estate. So in real estate, you can buy single family homes, you can buy duplexes, you can buy, right? There's a whole variety of things you can buy within real estate, right? But that's another option. Market-based investments. So these are things like stocks, bonds, mutual funds, exchange traded funds. So that's an option. Personal property is an option. So things like jewelry, instruments, right? Things that will grow in value over time. They're going to appreciate, right? It's going to be worth more 5 years from now than it is today. And then I separate, you know, I mentioned stocks, bonds, mutual funds. I separate that generally from retirement accounts. Inside of retirement accounts, like the only difference between the two usually is just how they're taxed. But inside of retirement accounts, same thing, stocks, bonds, mutual funds. And then the last thing is your own business or private equity, right? So if you're investing in stocks and bonds and mutual funds, you're buying into ownership of publicly traded companies.
Okay.
Building your own business, right? That's your company, right? You can build equity in your business so that someday you can sell it. Or if a friend is building a business and needs some money to scale and grow their business, then you may invest in a friend's business that you can't buy and sell on an exchange. And that's kind of private equity. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So there's only six options.
Yeah.
So narrow down the six options. And then what I would say is you're healthy financially if over the course of your lifetime, you build a net worth in at least three of those areas. So you pick the three. You don't have to be invested in all six. And really it just comes down to preference from there. Which one do you like? Which one makes more sense to you? Which one are you more comfortable with?
That's, and you know what I find really interesting about that? Because you said people find this confusing, and it is extremely confusing to say, well, I don't know. We want to invest. What does that mean? Where do we go? And I feel like I've read quite a number of books over the years on investing and paying down debt and all those things, but no one ever talks about the next step. Like that's where I feel lost. You know, you read these books and it's like, well, here's what you do. Here's how to get your mindset right around money. Here's how to budget. Here's how to pay off debt. So what do I do next so that I can grow it? And you said it in the beginning of so that you can retire or quit your job and have that financial freedom that you are secure. Right. And then to say there's only six places you can really put your money. You're like, oh, and I only need to pick three. Well, right. I think I can do that.
You didn't have to pick three today. Pick one today and pick a different one next year or 2 years from now, and then pick a different one 5 years from now.
Yeah.
So you only need to pick one. Typically, the first step is make sure that you've got enough in savings, because part of the nature of investing, like in any of these six things, part of investing is that you are going to incur some risk. And there's just like, there's no way around risk. There's different risk depending on the type of investment. So before you invest, be sure that you have at least 4 months in savings, at least. I like nine. I'm a 9-month person. And the reason I like 9 months, there are two. One is that the average unemployment is 9 months. So if you like lose a job suddenly, especially if you're a highly skilled person, you know, it can take a while to find the next gig. So I like 9 for that reason. The other reason I like 9 months is that I also call it an opportunity fund. So I like for my clients to have some cash so that we know as mothers, unexpected things happen all the time.
All the time.
Sometimes they're good, right? Sometimes they're really good unexpected things. So if that property comes up for sale that you never anticipated would come up for sale, or the business, the cute business down the street, or, you know, something like that, have some cash on hand so that you can take advantage of that opportunity. Then pick your investment. And usually the fork, that first investment, once you have money in savings, usually the fork is, do I want to invest in the market or do I want to invest in real estate? That's usually the decision. Do you find yourself kind of in that decision?
Or do you know? Well, so no, I have no idea. And that's the part where, like, we've got our banking accounts, we have our retirement accounts, we have, so I'm like, oh, well, we're already got a little bit, like, oh, we've got the retirement. We need to put more into retirement. Like, we're not fully funding our retirement accounts.
Yeah.
So I know that as well. So anyone who's listening, Jen and I had this conversation beforehand where I said, we are in the process of paying down debt. So I'm looking at, like, we pay down the debt and then what do we do next? So, and I think the real estate and the market-based investments are the ones you go, I don't even know where to start. Where do I go? Who do I talk to? What do I do? So dive into that a little bit for me, because I think we can understand retirement, 401ks, 403bs, like whatever you're doing, your pensions at your company, those kinds of things. I think people are used to those parts of conversations, in my opinion, anyway.
Yep.
So let's chat a little bit about the real estate and the market-based investments.
Beautiful. Do you want to pick one or you want me just to pick one?
Just go.
let's do market-based investments. So you want to invest in the market. And actually, even before we get into market-based investments, I would say either way, if you're going to do market-based investments or real estate, there's really only a handful of questions that you want to be able to answer to say, like, oh, is this the right thing for me? Right? What are the fees associated with this? What are the fees? What do I expect from it? Right. So if I'm going to buy this home or this duplex or whatever, what am I expecting? Am I expecting the value of the property to go up? And how much am I expecting it to go up? Am I expecting rent? Am I expecting rental income from it? So what is it going to cost? What do I expect from it? What are the risks associated with it? What's the amount of time it's going to take for me to manage it? Right. And is that something I want to do? And I can't think of anything else. I think that's pretty much it. So once you know those things, and if you're sitting here and you're like, oh, what should I do? You don't have to know the answer to those questions right now. Like when you go out and explore, you go, okay, well, as long as I can check those boxes and I can answer those questions, then I know, am I comfortable moving forward with this investment? So if we take those two market-based investments, the thing about investing in the market, like the number one most important thing, is diversification. So you have to own more than one thing. And I think people, right, kind of generally know that. We all have heard, don't put all your eggs in one basket. The easiest way to do that when it comes to investing in the market is by investing in things like mutual funds and exchange traded funds. Because if you wanted to buy individual stocks, Amazon is an example. If you want to buy one share of Amazon stock, it's going to cost you $3,000 for, you know, a little more than $3,000 for one share of Amazon stock. So in order to have a portfolio of investments that have more than just a handful of any one company, the easiest thing to do is buy a mutual fund or exchange traded fund. And that's where a lot of us, you know, myself included, pool money. We put smaller sums of money, could be as low as $100 a month, into a larger pool of money where with that mutual fund, we can own hundreds or even thousands of companies.
Yeah.
That makes sense?
Yes, it does. Yeah.
You can have an individual stock portfolio, but to be properly diversified with individual stocks, you need to have about $500,000, if not like $750,000, to like be able to buy enough different companies.
Yeah. Yeah.
To be like really well diversified with a stock portfolio. Yeah. So then once you know mutual funds or ETFs, there's three different ways you can invest there. Okay. You can be a do-it-yourselfer. So if you are a do-it-yourselfer, so if you like to do the
research, I am not, but
there's some things that I am. Like I reupholstered something recently that I was like, okay, now I'm going to get into upholstering or reupholstering. I don't even know the right word. So there's some things that you like doing yourself. Some things you're like, heck no, I don't want to have anything to do with that. If you go the DIY route, right, that's take a course, read lots of books, watch a bunch of YouTube videos, right, and figure out how to buy, how to sell, and how to pick your investments.
Okay.
The middle option is you can invest through companies like Betterment or Elvest, right, where for as low as $100 a month, when you sign into those types of I call them hybrid advisors, robo advisors is kind of the other terminology. But what they're going to do when you log into their site is they're going to ask you a series of questions, right? Like, what's the plan for this money? So how long do you plan on being invested? If the market went up or down by this much, how would you react? So they're going to ask you a handful of questions like that. And then they're going to say, based on how you answer those questions, this is the mutual fund that we recommend for you. Yeah. And then you just open an account and set up. I'm going to invest $2,000 in this account, or I'm going to invest $100 a month or $1,000 a month, right? Or however much you want to invest. But it will, by going through that online thing, it'll take you through those four questions we talked about, right? Okay. This is how much it costs. This is what you can expect. This is how much work it'll require, right? You can set up an automatic transfer so that there's relatively no work. So that's the middle option. And then the third option is you work with a pro. You hire somebody like me who will sit down with you and say, okay, same questions that we do online, but you could actually, like, it's a two-way conversation, right? Yeah. I can answer your questions. We can look at your overall situation and say, okay, based on what you've told me, based on what you're trying to accomplish, this is what I recommend in terms of a portfolio.
Yeah.
And of course, working with a pro one-on-one is going to cost more than, you know, working through an online platform. So it just depends. There's no right or wrong answer, right? Just depends. What's your preference? Yeah.
That's great. Okay. Thank you for that. Yeah.
Was that like way too long of an answer?
No. My God. No, to me, it was perfect. Cause it's like diversification, where we do it and how we do it. Like, yeah. I think that was perfect. Yeah.
Good. So like, you feel like, okay, like I could move forward. Like, cause that's I could pick an option.
Yeah. Yay. I love it.
Good. Cause that's what we want. And even you mentioned money mindset. I think one of the things about mindset is your mindset will change if you take action.
Yeah.
And when you take action, when you know that you need to invest, or even if you start small and you invest something, you know, a year from now, your mindset is different once you've kind of taken that first step in that direction.
Yeah. I love that. And by taking action, you mean just kind of making that investment or having that conversation or starting to do that. Yeah.
Whatever the next, just the one next step is. So just pick the one next step. Is the next step going online and looking at your robo advisor options? Is your next step going online and looking for a financial advisor near you? Right. Or booking the appointment or whatever. Once you take that tiny, just step of progress, action item of progress, it'll help your mindset move also.
That's awesome. Okay. So now touch a little bit on the real estate investing. I feel like this one might have a little bit more pieces to it, but
yeah. If you're considering real estate, should we start with like, your primary residence? Should we start with buying a home for yourself, or should we talk about this in terms of buying a rental property? What do you think?
Let's talk about both. I think there's value in both.
Okay.
I think. Yeah.
So when you're buying your, we'll start with a residence.
Yeah.
The first thing to do is get pre-approved for a loan.
Yeah.
So talk to a mortgage broker, or talk to your local banking relationship. I like mortgage brokers because they can shop different banks and have many different programs. They usually have more options available to you than if you just went to your favorite bank or credit union.
Yeah.
And based on your credit score and based on your income and based on your outstanding debt, they're going to say, we will offer you X number of dollars towards a home purchase. So get pre-approved first. But what I'll say about pre-approval is that a bank is happy to lend you, a mortgage is a product to a bank, with a big profit margin for a bank. So they're happy to offer you a much bigger mortgage than may be good for your personal financial situation.
Yeah.
So what I like to advise people is, if you can swing it, and this highly depends on what part of the country you're in, but if you can swing it, your mortgage should be 20% or less of your gross income. In other words, if you make $100,000 a year gross, your mortgage, principal and interest, should be $20,000 a year or less.
Okay. Yeah.
So you'll probably get approved. Banks are happy to happy to lend you up to a point where your mortgage would be closer to 30% of your income. And just know, if you go that high, then you've got, right, if we were talking about $100,000 of income, if 30% of it goes to a home, at least 10, if not 20 or 30% of it goes to taxes, right, depending on your tax situation. So right, you were talking about all your other bills have to fit into that $50,000 that's less, and you're left, and you have to be investing in your future self to some degree. My rule of thumb there, and I don't, again, like, it's a matter of preference, but on a spectrum where I was spending 50 and saving 50, that's like kind of middle of the road. Ideally, if you can save 20% of your income, that's one end of the spectrum. And then are you familiar with, have you heard of FIRE, financially independent, retire early?
No, I have not.
So there's a newer group of people that consider themselves, they call, that's part of a FIRE movement. They've kind of dropped the retirement part, so it's just financially independent. But those people, a lot of them got out of college and got like high paying jobs in tech or the medical field or something like that, and were living on 20% of their income and saving and investing 80% of your income, their income. Yeah. So they're like the extreme investing in yourselves, sacrificing for today and investing in their future on one end of the spectrum. The other end of the spectrum, spend 80% on your today self and 20% towards your future self. Anywhere in between there is fine, right? How you define balance and how you want to give your funds is up to you. And that's kind of part of that real estate question. How much of your home, how much of living do you want to take up your the today lifestyle and your future lifestyle? Rule of thumb, 20% or less. And if you're renting today and looking to buy, what I would say is, once you kind of figure that, like, that's the range you want to be. So let's say it's $20,000 a year. If you're renting today and you're paying $1,500 a month, that's $18,000 a year. Your mortgage is going to be $2,000 a year more than that. So what I would say is, put that, pay your mortgage, that $2,000 extra. A year, put that in an account so that you feel on from a month to month basis what that lifestyle with that mortgage feels like starting now. Plus, it helps you build up funds, both for a down payment, or homeownership is expensive, so things break every year.
Yes, they do, all the time.
If it isn't the house, it's the dog, and if it isn't the dog, it's the kids. There's always going to be,
just got to be prepared for it.
Exactly. It's just like packing the diaper bag, right? Like, we got to be ready for it. Yeah. We have the snacks, we have the water, we have the extra set of clothes.
I love it.
That's the emergency slash opportunity fund. So, So that's your primary residence. When it comes to rental properties, I think without boring your listeners, the only question, the only question I would pose for them is really just kind of like, what kind of landlord do they want to be? And what is their expectation? Mm-hmm. So when it comes to real estate on your balance sheet, there's two ways that it makes money for you. One is that it generates income for you. So you could be looking for properties where once you put a renter in it, it's going to be making you money on day one. It's generating you income on day one. And then there's an appreciation play, which means you don't care so much about what's happening in terms of income. What you're expecting is you're buying a piece of real estate today that you anticipate is going to grow in value more than anything else, any other use you would have for that money. So that's your expectation. You know, kind of decide which way do you want to play in there? Most residential owners who are successful with it go with the income play, like get your money working day one. There's much less risk in that world of real estate investing. Appreciation is, there's a little bit of speculation going on because you're anticipating a future value that is not always guaranteed.
And we have seen that in our lifetime. We have seen that. So, and I think that's what it, I would have no desire to do. You just hear so much about real estate investing and you're going, I don't want to be a landlord. Like, I want to invest my money and kind of be hands off and just allow it to do what it needs to do. So to me, I see that and go, yeah, that's a little bit more work than I'd like to put in right now in my life. But it's good to kind of hear, like, it just to understand, like, you've really simplified it to say it's just this big convoluted idea and to break it down and say, here are your options. You don't have to do all of them. Do what speaks to you.
And there isn't a right and a wrong. I think that's like, if nothing else, I just want people to know there isn't a right and a wrong answer. Anytime you find yourself wanting to know what's the right answer, it's add the two words for you. What's the right and wrong answer for you? Cause that's going to be different than it is for me and for, you know, my neighbors and for whoever else. You know, we do that and we do that with parenting, right?
Yeah.
That sounds cool. Like, hey, like you've tried these three things for potty training and like it, one worked for one kid and did not work for the other kid. Right.
Like, how it goes.
Same is true with your financial decisions.
Yeah. So a question for you. So if you're someone who's in a situation like I am, where we're paying down debt and then we need to build up that savings to then invest, is there the steps to follow? And again, you're probably going to say whatever feels right to you to say, is it more important to kind of take the steps and say, pay off the loans first, the loans and credit cards, not including our mortgage, of course, but our loans and credit cards, then building up the savings and then investing? Like, is there that would you recommend kind of that step, or really saying, can you do a little bit at the same time?
I'm a fan of the latter. Do a little bit at the same time.
Okay.
I know that I disagree with the Dave Ramsey's and the Susie Orman's on that front. Yeah. I like doing them simultaneously. Okay. And you can kind of tweak the degrees of them.
Yeah.
But the thing about focusing all of your funds on debt is that when you focus everything on debt, that's where your brain, that's where like all of your time and energy goes.
Yeah.
And you're not nurturing yourself.
Yeah.
While you're like trying to pay off your like previous decision. Yeah. So I say nurture yourself first. I would actually like prefer you get at least 3 or 4 months. And this, I think Susie and Dave kind of agree, at least have some kind of emergency reserves before you pay off debt. Cause if you don't, what happens is like the dog gets sick, right? And you end up just needing to
going back in.
Put yourself back into debt. But then have a split, right, of the money that's that you have dedicated. So let's just say it's $500 a month that I want to both pay off debt and get working for me. Depending on the structure of your debt and how much debt you have, like maybe 250 goes to paying off debt and the other 250 goes to building your net worth.
Yeah.
The reality of interest rates today is that you could probably consolidate, restructure your debt, and get a very low rate so that you're paying very, very little in interest. Cause that's like, that's the reality of interest rates today. You could be paying very little in interest, and any money that you're putting towards your future self, you could expect that it will work harder for you than the interest that you're paying. And so you'll put yourself in a position where 5 years from now or 10 years from now, you may still have the debt, but you'll also have more money that if you were like, hey, I just want to go ahead and pay it off all now, then you could, you'd have that option.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. I love that. And I love that because I've read Dave Ramsey. I don't know Susan Orman, but I've read Dave Ramsey a number of years ago and it never sat right. Cause it was like, but I still feel like we should be doing a little bit here and also still kind of having fun at the same time. Like, you know, I don't want to live off of rice and beans just because I'm trying to pay off my debt. You know, like I want to live a full life and be able to do all of this at the same time. So I love that you kind of have this approach of you've got to do what works for you and you've got to live your life. So I was trying to think if I had another question and I did, and I think it left my head. It happens. Yeah. It's a mom brain and it happens. So maybe not even, it's not really a question, but maybe just some positive advice. So you hear of people and, you know, I'll say this or my husband will say this of like, I wish I would have learned how to do this, how to really have a handle on my finances when I was younger. Why don't they teach this in school? Why don't they teach this to kids? So it's funny, we're really learning and gearing in on savings and investing and at the same time teaching our kids how to do the same with if you want this, you can save up the money, but if you're going to spend it here, you need to know. So it's like, it's in this weird position of, I wish I knew this earlier, but I'm grateful that I'm learning it now. And it's okay that I'm teaching it to my kids as I'm figuring this out.
There is nothing better. My belief is that there's nothing better than for your kids to watch you learn something new.
Yeah.
For your kids to learn that you never stop learning and that they can learn along with you.
Yeah.
Right. And that you don't have the whole world figured out. Cause like nobody ever. You'd be 100 years old and you're not going to have the whole world figured out. So for them to know very, very early that you never have to have the whole world figured out and that anything that comes at you, you can learn how to deal with it. I think that that's a gift that you can give them. Yes. All of those things you just mentioned. What I would want people to know in terms of financial literacy is that money is a set of skills. And like any skill, especially us moms, we know, right? Watching my 3-year-old brush his teeth is painful.
Yes, it is.
So awkward at it, right? And it's just such a good, like, humble reminder that at some point I was really awkward at brushing my teeth, right? But I have done it now every day for a long time. Yeah. So it's not awkward for me anymore, right?
Yeah.
Finance is a set of skills also. So if you're not using them and you're not practicing them, they're going to be awkward. And that is okay.
Yeah.
Okay to be awkward. Everybody's awkward the first time they do anything. And then I would say, like, I like to bucket the skills in, you know, earning money as a whole skill set. So how do you price yourself in the market? How do you go for the job? How do you negotiate a wage, right? All of those things. That's a whole set of skills. Saving is a skill set, right? Investing is a skill set. Giving is a skill set. And then spending is a skill set. So I like, you know, there's 5 money skills.
Yeah.
You as a parent, me as a parent, I still like, okay, how am I doing in terms of earning and like, what can I learn and what's next? How am I doing in terms of saving, investing, right? Pick one skill to work on over the next 90 days. Don't pick any more. Just pick one skill, right? And then you could do it again another 90 days from now. tackle one at a time. When it comes to teaching our kids about money, if you're learning the skills, having a vocabulary around money and being able to talk about money and being able to talk about it freely, again, think about it just like driving a car. They had to learn, they're going to have to learn how to drive a car. So as you're learning financial skills, you can also teach them financial skills. Two tools to use in teaching kids about money. One is really easy. It's like the three jars. Have you seen those before?
Okay. We have our three jars. Yes.
Cool. So you're ahead. You're ahead of the game. So the save, spend, and give jars. That's a great, that's a great way to learn about money. And then an allowance is a great way to learn about money. And I'm very adamant that in the philosophy that an allowance is a tool to learn money skills. So do not tie an allowance to chores.
Okay.
So we're like, you, and you can even, and if you've done it, if you've already tied it to chores, you can always sit your kids down and say, guess what, guys, we're going to try something new.
Oh, I like it. So chores, then
go ahead.
Go ahead. No. Well, I was going to say, so we do chores and they earn money when they do chores. So is there still value in saying, here's your allowance, you'll get this much every week. And then saying, when you do these chores and do extra help, you can earn extra.
Yeah. I think, you know, you and I are having this conversation about money and confusion about money and the, you know, emotion around money, because there's so little financial literacy and there's so much shame guilt and a lot of like, there's a lot of baggage around money. So what happens when we tie chores to allowance is we're doing the same thing. We're making more baggage around money than we need to. So I like separating the two in that, look, I'm giving you this allowance so that you can learn money skills. I can take the allowance away anytime if I think you're not learning money skills, right? So like, just make it about learning financial skills. Make the training wheels on the bike about learning how to ride the bike, but don't make them about anything else. Then I think chores, I think it's important for kids to have chores, right? Being a part of a family means everybody chips in as a part of the family, and we're part of a small community. We're all going to need help. We're, some of us are going to need more help than others at other different times, right? So we're all responsible for different things. So I think chores are absolutely a part of being a part of a family. And then, like you said, right, so those two things should be like very, very separate concepts. And you can add, you know, you've got basic chores that are non-negotiables. But if you want to earn more money, then yes, there's a list of things you can do that are extra on top of chores that will help with their, you know, learning how to earn, right? And kind of price their services.
Yeah. I love that. That's amazing. I wish I could sit and talk to you for hours, Jen. This has been, and I'm like, oh my God, has it really been that long?
I
still talk.
No,
not at all. Because like I said, before we even started talking, I'm like, this is a topic I have so many questions on, and just, I want to be like a sponge. I'm at the point where I'm like, I want to learn all of this, because I know we're like, we're getting there, and just really paying more and more attention as far as budgeting and saving and spending. And we just moved into a new home last summer. So it's, you know, we bought a house in, oh my gosh, 2009, when we first got married, when where we were financially then to where we are. Like, it's just such a...
2009 was a very interesting year to buy a house. Yes.
Yeah, we bought our house. It was really, really cheap. So we were in a house that we sold and made no money on. We just, because we were in a very bad neighborhood, and we had to make a quick decision to get out. And so, yeah, so it was just a very different, you know, even saying, well, okay, this is the mortgage you're going to give me. What is that going to cost me monthly? Okay, what are we paying now? Is this similar to what we're paying? And we based our mortgage off of what would our monthly payment be. It couldn't be more than what we were paying at the old house. Like, it was just a very, very different conversation. And I love learning about this, because like you said, it's something I didn't learn about growing up. So I'm being the sponge and I'm learning now. And at the same time, as a parent of kids who are 6 and 8, of doing the jars and they've worked really well. And I think I'm going to have to talk to my husband now about making this, saying, let's talk about an allowance and then chores are extra. And because the chores worked for a little bit and they kind of lost their appeal, but they have done really well. I'm just going to boast myself of saying they've learned really well. They both wanted to save up for a pet. They both did that. They had money in their save jar for months. We just got a bunny. So I paid for the bunny. My son gave me the $50. I said, you pay 50. I'll pay if it's whatever it is over 50, I will pay, and we'll pay for the cage and all the stuff.
Nice.
But he said, let that money sit in a jar and didn't touch it. And the other one's saving for his animal. And now they're talking about saving for a Nintendo Switches.
Ooh, nice.
So
that's 100 you know? More financial education than I got growing up. So,
oh, same. Yeah. I said, well, they're doing more than I ever did 20 years ago, 10 years ago.
Yep.
So so now we're having, my husband, even they went yard sailing the other day in our neighborhood and he goes, well, you can bring $5. Bring your money with you. You're going to spend your own money and say, you can either spend this now or you can wait and see what else we find. And they ended up finding some other things and they went, I'm glad he said at one point they were both looking at items and they went, yeah, I don't, he goes, but they took their time. They looked at it. They thought about if they really want it and they both put the stuff back.
Wow.
And then as they went along, they found things that they really, really wanted. And it's a reminder to me to say, I need to do that for myself as well. You know, do I really, really need this? Nope, not right now.
Right.
So, so I appreciate this conversation. Awesome. And I love that you're out here. So tell me how women can find you and learn from you and work with you and all the really good things.
Yes, I would be thrilled to talk to anybody. So if this conversation has sparked a question or whatnot, my website is utorwealth.com. That's UTORWEALTH wealth.com. And on the website, there's a calendar link. So you can book 15 minutes with me. You can book 30 minutes with me, complimentary, no judgment, no obligation. So again, if you have follow-up questions, I'm happy to chat with you. I've got a couple resources on the website. I think in a week or two, I will launch a how to move from saver to investor guide. So a lot of the things that we talked about in this podcast, will be in a neat, you know, pretty little 3-page guide, also. And you can find my Money Untabooed is my podcast. So, same, a lot of these kind of interviews, with moms and messy lives and what did they learn about money growing up and what was the best lesson and worst lesson and things like that. So if you want to commiserate with other women, and a lot of women business owners, you can hop over and listen to a couple episodes there.
Awesome. And I will link all of that stuff in the show notes so people can go and find it and chat with you. And I will just say, as you can tell, listening to this call, Jen is amazing. She's been wonderful to talk to. So I would say go and book that 15-minute call if you have any questions, because you have been a joy and you've been so unbelievably, I felt like I had my own personal conversation with you anyway.
This is fun. So this is fun for me too. So if you think of more questions and you want to do a part two, you let me know.
Absolutely. I certainly will. Thank you so much for coming, Jen.
Thanks for having me.